Good evening. My name is Roy. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 28, 1982, one day at a time. Welcome to the Saturday Night Stephen Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're glad you're here, especially newcomers. And let's have a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. Together, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're glad you're here, especially newcomers. In keeping with our singleness of purpose, Tradition 3, which states the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve a common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Of course, in accordance with group contract, all about the cell phone and the kids. We're not going to have any problem with that. So we'll have Tom to read how it works, and Tommy, and then Linda.
I'm Tom, not an alcoholic, and it's how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who count all their will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. But many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we'd find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We ask his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. Praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaim, "What an order, cannot go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. our description of the alcoholic, the chapter 2, the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could ever relieve our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if we were sought.
My name is Linda, and I'm an alcoholic. And these are the 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you. My name is Tommy, and I'm a recovering drug addict. And these are the promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Stephen Williams, I am an alcoholic. Forgive my tardiness, I do apologize. I flew here the best I could, and it wasn't quite good enough. Where are we at? Tonight is speaker night, and I asked Terry from my home group to come over, from the Meridian group to come over and speak tonight. And a little bit of background on Terry, and I'm sure he doesn't mind me telling on him a little bit, knowing Terry. First time I met Terry was out on the golf course. We were playing a Wednesday night scramble. Me and I had a partner back then that we had a golf cart together and we shared it and the expenses together and we were drinking buddies together. And And this gentleman, I'll call him T, tells me, "Man, we got Terry playing with us tonight." "Terry, who's Terry?" And T says, "Well, he's this preacher guy, but he's really cool. He smokes and he cusses." I said, "Oh, really?" I said, "Does he drink?" And T says, "I don't know. I don't think so." So anyway, we start playing Scrabble. "Hey, Terry, you want a beer?" "No, no, no, that's okay." And a couple of hoes later, "Hey, Terry, you want a beer?" "No, no, 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 that's okay." I disappeared from the golf course for probably 2 years after that or so. And one night, I'm sitting there in a meeting in the Meridian group, and then walks this guy, and I'm thinking, "I know him from somewhere. I know him from somewhere." Could not remember where I knew him from. And part of it, of course, it didn't have anything to do with the alcohol that I was doing back then, you understand. But it finally struck me one night, I knew him from the golf course. That's where I knew him from. I love it when Terry comes to our meetings and he shares with us and he speaks. You know, one of the great things about AA is we can take what we want. And we can leave the rest. When Terry speaks, I always listen. I really do. Sometimes I take something with me. A lot of times I take something with me. It's my honor and privilege to introduce Terry to y'all tonight.
Good evening. I'm going to try to talk as loud as I can. I may come up in front. I don't.
I hope that gets it. First of all, I'm walking over a stove up like an old man. I'm getting to be an old man. I got straight off this morning with my son. I reached over to pick up a golf ball and I lost my back. And it's been killing me all night. Anyway, my name is Terry. I'm an alcoholic. And it's truly by the grace of God, I haven't had a baby drink since March the 26th of 1988. And that's a hell of a deal.
Amen.
I want to thank Stephen for his introduction. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me over. I want to bring you our greetings from our group over in Meridian, from the Brothers and Sisters. I talked to almost over there. That group is doing a neat deal. When I first started going, it was about, what, 5, 6, 7 on a regular basis. Now we're averaging 20, 25, 30, you know. We went from 2 meetings a week to now we've got 5 meetings a week, and they're well attended. It's neat to see AA grow. A little bit about me. I was born and raised in Amarillo, Texas. My parents... I don't know much about drinking with my parents. I never saw them drink. My mother was a teetotaler, and I think the reason for that is that her family were bootleggers from Oklahoma, and she was just a hard-shelled Southern Baptist and wouldn't want me to drink around the house. Now, my dad, no drink. I know that. Kind of uneventful life, you know, just normal life. My sister and I and my mom and dad, we weren't real wealthy, we weren't real poor, we just, you know, this is all right back. It really was. I can tell you a story about my first drink, and it's kind of interesting. I don't know about anybody else, but I've always been kind of a curious, inquisitive type of a person. I've always been that way, you know, what makes things work. I mean, when I was a little kid, I got an electric train set, and I one time took the electric leads off of the train set and stuck them across the pin, a pin. And set the bedroom on fire. Just do that kind of thing. So my best friend when I grew up, a guy named Gary, he and I must have been 13 or 14 years old. And this guy, I don't know why we did it, but we went to the public library in Amarillo. It used to be downtown, a big old building called Tiffin's Library, old home. And we went in there, and I looked up how to make wine. Why I looked that up, I had no earthly idea. But I discovered it's pretty simple. You take grape juice, sugar, a little bit of yeast, mix it together, and let it set. And so I thought, we'll try that. So I found some grape juice and sugar and yeast, and we had these old quart, I guess they were quart fruit jars, and we mixed up in there some of that, you know, cool yeast in there. And we had out in Gary's, his dad was a painter, and we had out in his paint shop sitting back there. And that, I don't know if you've ever made wine or not, but it stinks when it starts fermenting, you know. Well, we got scared we'd get caught. So if you've ever been to Texas Panhandle, you know, the wind always blows out the southwest. They got these big elm trees, and they all kind of lean like to the northeast. Well, we decided to take those jars and tie a string around them, and we tied this big old elm tree and set up there, you know. And we did. Well, the wind got to blowing, I guess, and one of those jars broke against the side of that tree, and the stuff was leaking down. And that little Boston Terrier dog, I always remember this little Boston Terrier dog, and he got to licking, you know, and he got drunk. You know, everybody knows about that. Well, we climbed up in the tree and come back down, and we had this jar that was fairly good. We kind of skimmed the stuff off the top. I'd give a drink to Gary. He drank it, spit it out. I drank and I swallowed it. And all I can tell you is that was the first time at the age of 13, I guess it's about 13, that I was sniffed, hip, and cool. I don't have to explain that. There was something about that, you know. And I'm going to tell you now, I drank every chance I got from that time until I was 38 years old. And every time I drank, I was trying to get that same feeling. And never could get it. You ever been on a merry-go-round? Mm-hmm. You know those brass rings? You're supposed to go around and you know, you can catch the brass ring. If you catch it, you go around one more time. Well, to me, drinking was like that. I was on a merry-go-round, and just about the time I got to that brass ring, somebody moved it. You know, like one more time. Anyway, I drank in high school. Every chance I got, I drank. The thing I know now about being an alcoholic, that when I drank, I didn't drink thinking about that drink. I thought I was drinking to get drunk. That's where I was going. I mean, I didn't necessarily like it or dislike it. It was just to change out there. Anyway, in 1968, I graduated from high school. I went in the Air Force in February. The draft was going on about that time, and my grandfather was on the draft board, and I always remember it was right after Christmas. He came to me and said, Terry, he says, your name's coming up on the draft board list. They're taking 32 out of our county. I went, oh, okay. And he says, 17 of them are going to Marine Corps, and I didn't want to be a Marine. So I went down, and I went down to join the Navy. Navy recruiter wasn't there. Air Force recruiter was. I joined the Air Force. You know, that's a neat deal if you're in the Air Service. You can drink all you want. And he had no other way, as long as you show up for work. You know. Well, anyway, I was a military policeman for about a year. Went to Vietnam. I cross-trained into search and rescue. Became a gunner on a helicopter. Search and rescue, big helicopter. I was glad Tommy talked about being a drug addict. Well, I discovered something real neat. They had these wonderful little white tablets when I was in Vietnam. You could go to the drugstore, the Vietnamese drugstore, and buy them. You get a whole bunch of them real cheap. And by God, you could take that, mix it with a little hooch. It was a hell of a deal. You know, I mean, it was a hell of a deal. It was pretty neat. Anyway, I drank pretty bad. And if you're drunk like me, you know, pretty soon you cross that magic line. And it's not fun anymore, and it becomes work, and you get scared. When I got out of the service, I became a policeman. Matter of fact, I was chief of police in Wyoming. That's kind of a neat deal. I'll tell you about being a policeman. If any of y'all have hard feelings about policemen, I understand why. I do understand why. You know, I do understand that. One thing I discovered as a policeman, you can drink after hours in bars, and bar owners like you to do that. And that's a pretty neat deal because you're not around civilians, you know, the regular public. You drink as much as you want. Well, anyway, I got drunk one night after work, and I got off from work about midnight, 1 o'clock, and I went to a friend of mine down to the bar, and I'm drinking there. It's about 2:30, 3 o'clock. And I called one of the patrolmen to come pick me up. I didn't want to drive because I was drunk. And he took me to my house. As he took me to my house, I took my old 45 out and I started shooting streetlights out. And I didn't have a shotgun. Well, word got about that. About 3 days later, I lost my job. Well, in the meantime, about that time, I lost my job. My wife, my first wife, had left, went back to be with her parents in Washington State. Had a little girl at that time. Dawn was 3, and she was pregnant with the second girl, Jane. And she moved back to Seattle, Washington area, and that was okay. You know, I mean, it hurt, but it was okay. And I drank pretty good. Anyway, they fired me from that job. And I come back to Texas. And one of the things they had to do before they fired me, they wanted me to go see a psychiatrist. So I went to the psychiatrist. And I don't know if y'all are like me, but I've heard that most drunks will not be honest with psychiatrists. And he asked me if I drank. And I said, yeah, a little bit. And anyway, he thought that I was suffering from delayed stress syndrome. So he sent me to the VA hospital. And I went to this VA hospital and I saw this psychiatrist there. And at that time, they didn't have treatment like they do now for delayed stress. You just go see a counselor. And I was seeing this counselor for about, probably 5 or 6 times. And I got to thinking, that guy knows more smarter than I am. And I got almost out of education. I'll just go get me a degree in psychology and I'll figure it out myself. So I went back home to Texas. Went back home to Texas, enrolled in college. At that time, I lacked about typical drug. When I graduated from college, I had 196 hours of college. But the problem is, I had a lot of hours that I just would take stuff that I never do a degree plan. You know, I just take it. You know. Well, I go back home to get a degree, and they look at all my stuff. The guy looks at me, he's got a lot of hours. He says, but you know, you need to take the time to fill up degree plan. So I said, okay, I want one in psychology. And so I did that. I did another 33 hours in the psych field and got my bachelor of science degree. Still drinking. Thought I'd go get my master's degree, and I did do a master's degree in psychology. Still drinking. One of the stories I'm going to tell is one of the things I had to do when I was doing my master's level work, I had to do an internship. And the internship that I received was working at a treatment center. Coincidence, I guess. The only thing I remember about that is those people had a problem. And I don't know about y'all, they had a problem. I just said they had a problem. I remember nothing about that treatment center except they had a problem. That's all I remember about it. Well, anyway, had been divorced at that time about, I guess, 3.5, 4 years. Had finished graduate school, and I met this woman who I'm married to today. We got married, and still drinking, you know. I mean, I don't know how to explain it. Just still drinking. The way I drink, I always said to myself, I'd never drink before noon. Did you ever make a promise? I discovered that noon is at any time of day you want it to be in. But you know, somewhere in the world, it's noon right then. You know, I did that. You know, I like to tell the story about, I used to always carry a bottle in my car, and I'd go to work in the morning, and I had guys working for me. I had a group of men that worked for me. Had a good job. And I used to go home at noon. I didn't live very far from work. I'd go home at noon, right? Hands get shaking a bit, you know. Yeah, I guess you're drunk like me. I'd take a break, you know, drink a little scotch, and take some mouthwash, and what kind of milk. I'd get off work, and I'd go out there to the car, and I'd reach under that front seat, and I'd grab that half pint, right? Take the top off, chunk it, you know. Well, I don't know about y'all, but it wasn't going to go back home. I mean, you know, that's the way I know that. You know, I'd take and drink that deal and drink that half pint. You know, things kind of settle down. I'd go to the golf course. I'd play golf with guys. We'd be drinking. I'd go home. I'd get home 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. New wife. You know, she'd be doing whatever new wife do at that time of night. She'd go to bed, you know, and I'd drink till I went to bed. You know. And anyway, the bottom line of it is, March of 1988, I've been nominated and received a very big award in the state of Texas for safety. It's a national award. And I went to the National Safety Conference in San Antonio to get this award. It was on Monday after, it was Monday morning. Went to the meetings at noon. We went down to Riverwalk, had lunch, and walking back to the hotel. And I don't know why it struck me, but there was a liquor store on the corner of this street. I do not know what the street is. I was in San Antonio about 3 years ago, and that damn liquor store is still there, though, I think. That, you know. I walked in, and I got me a bottle. I told the guys, I said, you guys go ahead, I'm going to stop in here for a minute, and I'll be right with you. They said, okay. I got that bottle and I went to my hotel room, and hell, I never made it back to the meetings. Never made it back. And the neatest thing about it is you can use it, you know, you get a bellhop, you know, and they'll get your bottle for you, you know. Somewhere during an episode, somewhere between Monday evening and Friday, I realized I had a problem. And, you know, alcohol wasn't working. It wasn't changing how I felt, you know. It worked for a little bit, but it quit working. I had to drink more and more. And I just said, God help me. That's all I said. I do not know what time of day it was or night. I know I was in a hotel room at the Radisson on the Riverwalk in San Antonio, but I can't tell you more than that. Anyway, I kind of got myself together, got on the plane Friday, came back home. 2 weeks later, the college I worked for, they had received a federal grant saying that if they were receiving federal money for their students, they had to have some kind of intervention program for drug and alcohol. And because I had a master's degree in psychology, they figured I'd be a good person to do that. And a guy named Rick, and he came from out in, I believe, Northern California, did the training. It was kind of strange. It went on a Wednesday through Monday, and he had the weekend off. And Rick started talking about the disease of alcoholism. And he had this chalkboard, and he drew this line across his chalkboard, and he put two markers at each end of the line. And he said, this is when you're born, and this is when you die. And then he put another mark across the line. And he said, this line here is if you're an alcoholic, you cross it, and you can never go back. And he started talking about the disease concept. And it was like the guy had read my mail. Well, I go through this whole deal, and we also said this. He says, if you're not sure you're an alcoholic, he says, the next time you drink, observe if you can how you drink. An alcoholic never thinks about the drink they're drinking, they're thinking about the next one that's coming. Well, that weekend, I had a friend come over to help me put in a new dishwasher in the house. I had a great... My wife, Karen, and some of y'all here know her, she's a neat gal, smart, intelligent, normal, which is good, because she's normal. Anyway, I told her, I said, make sure you go to the liquor store and get some stuff, guys, let me put the dishwasher in. She was a good wife. She knew when she went to the liquor store, she brought back a case of beer, a bottle of scotch, a bottle of bourbon. That's just, you know, that's what she did, you know. Good wife. Anyway, I'm sitting there and we're putting this dishwasher in, and we get through doing it, and these guys are drinking a beer, and I'm thinking about my next drink. You know? Now, I don't know about y'all, but man, if you're thinking about your next drink, you ain't going. You're an alcoholic problem, but you ain't going. Well, kind of went through that. On Monday afternoon, they had a group of guys from Alcoholics Anonymous come over. And one of the guys that came over was a guy that had worked with me that a year before I had taken to a treatment center. And they talked about Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, anyway, the meeting ends and everybody leaves. And I go back to my office and I call old Bob. Bob's dead now. Yankee Bob. I said, Bob, can you call the officer man? He goes, what? And he and I used to gamble together. We played golf together. Bob and I was in the circus room in Amarillo. He was a pool hustler. He's the only guy I knew that got thrown back into a bar. He went all their money left, and they went after him and threw him back in the bar. The only guy that got thrown into a bar. Yeah, anyway, I asked Bob to come by my office, and he came in, and I said, Bob, I think I'm an alcoholic. And he went, no joke. I cleaned that up. No joke. And I said, I don't know what to do. And he says, well, if you want to quit drinking, come with me. And I said, all right. And at 5:30 that evening, on March the 26th, he took me to my first AA meeting in Amarillo. And I ain't had a drink since. Now, I'm going to tell you when I come to AA. The only time I came to AA was I didn't want to die drunk. And I thought you would teach me how to drink responsibly. And the first thing y'all start talking about in there is just not drinking one at a time. And I drank. And the meeting I went to, I didn't know much about it except the ABCs. That's what the topic is, discussion meeting. Left the meeting. They give me a newcomer packet. I went home. I read a newcomer packet. you know. My wife, she says, what do you think? I don't know. She says, well, should I get rid of all the liquor? And I said, hey, don't get hurt. Hold on. I got the next morning, I went to Amy. I don't know why. I went to Amy. Had a 7 o'clock morning meeting in my old home group. I went to Amy. Walk in there. And some of those old guys was around, and they said, well, glad to see you back. They said, you had a great last night. And I said, no. They said, good. You know? And then they told me, they said, Terry, said, you don't have to drink as long as you live if you don't want to. And I said, what? They said, you don't have to drink again as long as you live if you don't want to. And I am so grateful they give me a choice. Seriously. If they told me not to drink, shit. They didn't. No one ever told me not to drink in AA. I don't know about y'all, but they never told me not to drink. Now, they told me if I drink the results of it, you know, but they never told me not to drink. You know, all the time. Well, I went to those old meetings, you know, and got in a desire chip. It was a big deal. Those are the days of treatment centers. Y'all got treatment centers, right? Well, the old days, they had treatment centers everywhere. You know, they had 30 or 40 people in treatment. They bring the AA meetings, and they always give out chips on Friday night. There'd be 20 or 30 people get desire chips. They wouldn't be. And, you know, a month later, 10 or 15 of those same 20 would get a 30-day chip. And a year later, not many people got chips. You know, it's the way it was. Anyway, I started one of these meetings. And I got to get up and say, oh, I ain't great, W, and I've been sober, you know, 10 years, and I'm happy and joyous and free. And I said, liar bastard. I mean, I would say this, there ain't no way a person can go a year without drinking and be happy. That's the way I was. You know, now I was going to meetings. They got to say it. I don't know if y'all sit around here fake it till you make it. But they just tell me, keep coming to meetings, Terry, and I just keep going to meetings. Got a sponsor. Got a big book. At that time, I had a master's degree. And a master of science degree, and I got this big book, and I don't know if you've read it or not. Have you all read the big book? It's not written real well. It's not high prose. It's really not. It's pretty simple stuff, you know. Well, I had a sponsor, and he kind of helped me through this. You know, I did something about 45 days, and he says, have you done your 4-step yet? And I went, well, yeah, I've kind of been working on it. He goes, well, good, let's meet on Saturday. We'll go over it. I went, okay. I ain't done nothing on 4-step. You know. Well, I know I got to show up to see him on a Saturday. Yeah, I don't know about you. I didn't want to tell him. I didn't want to break his heart. You know, he thought he was doing a good job. I didn't want to break his heart. I'm going to meet him. And that was on like a Wednesday. I went to meet him on Thursday night. There's an old guy named Irv. He's dead now. Irv been sober a long time. Got 12-step by Bill Wilson out in California. Irv did it. I was talking to Irv. I said, I don't have your 4-step. And he said, shit, man, he said, when you was coming, we give you a picture. In the paper, they got a picture. I said, right, okay. He holds up right there, here's a picture. I go, say, it's a picture of how to do one. He says, do it like that. I went, oh, okay. Now, I go to my office on Friday morning, and you know, I got a blank sheet of paper. And I said, I look at that deal, and it says, mad at mother, or something. And I went, mother. Why was I angry? How it affected me. And I just turned around and said, hey, you know, and I don't know about y'all, but I can always tell when a newcomer is doing a 4-step because they got a spiral notebook with them. Have y'all noticed that? They got a spiral notebook. They're doing a 4-step. Well, I did not have a legal pad. Well, I meet my sponsor on that Saturday. I fix to have a noon at the 11 o'clock meeting, and he's in there drinking coffee. And I'm nervous, you know. I tell him it's kind of like I feel like I'm fixing to do a liquor store holdup. You know, I'm nervous, you know. He goes, well, let's go back here and talk. I said, all right. He said, I thought you'd like to have this kind of formal instead of informal. And I said, oh, okay. He said, well, what you got? And I handed it to him. He said, I don't see that. And he shared with me something that was really neat. Something that he had done while drinking. And he says, now, I'm sharing that with you because I want you to know I don't want anybody else to know about that other than you. And we got a pact. I ain't going to tell them about your stuff. You don't tell them about my stuff. And the neatest thing, I get goosebumps saying about it, when I do that 4-step, doing that 5-step, every time I have one of these, they say, well, where were you at, Terry? Where were you at, man? Where were you at? What did you do to set in motion? And I had to look at that. And the result of that was I discovered that I was the problem. Drinking was not the problem. My selfishness and self-centeredness was my problem. And I had always been that way. As long as I remember, I had always been that way. And he told me something, he said, Terry, says, you don't know it now, but he says, the compulsion hurts to leave you now. So we had a little prayer, and he says, it's going to be gone. He says, now, you may not know it, but I'm telling you it's gone. And I went, oh, and, you know. Because I'm going to tell you right now, for the longest time in this program, I knew I was going to drink again. I just didn't know when. I'm with you. I mean, I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm going with you. I knew I'd drink again. I just didn't know when it was going to be. Well, I kept going to meetings, you know, had a sponsor. And I was blessed with a sponsor after I'd been sober about, I guess, maybe 5 months. They had a meeting on Thursday nights over at the Catholic Church. He said, Terry, why don't you go to that meeting? He said, you need to go over there. I said, oh, it's not me. You need to go over there. Well, I go on a Thursday night to Catholic Church, this old guy is sitting on the stick, old guy. And I come walking up the door and he says, what do you want? And I says, is that Amy in here? And he goes, yeah, third door down on the left. And I said, okay. I turn the door and he goes, you got a big book? I go, yeah. He said, where is it? In my car. He said, go get the SOB. You know? And I went back and got it. And I went in this meeting and this was a turning point for me in AA. The closest person to sobriety to me at that time had been sober 10 years. And some had been sober 25 and 30 years. And it kind of had a big book study. They called it the CAM study. They had horses in the big book. They'd cut up and they'd put in a can. And what they would do is, they'd have a topic. What happened is, the week before someone had a meeting, somebody pulled out a topic. That person would study that topic. And the following week, he'd come back and talk about how it was in their life. Right? So I go to this meeting, you know, they do an interview. One of those old guys in there says, you coming back next week? And I go, well, yeah. And they said, well, you got the topic. I said, okay. I pull on the can, you know, I got the topic. I don't remember what it was. I got the deal. You know, I start reading the big book, you know, and I start taking notes. I'm going to present the following week. Well, I show up and I got, you know, I'm an academic. You know, I got all this stuff together. So I get up here and I pontificate for about 25 minutes or so. And they said, Terry, thank you. That's real nice. But we think it means this. So then you got an 8th grade education. I got a master's degree. They said, well, your best thinking got you here. Think about that. Your best thinking got you. I cry because I miss that group. I've always missed that group. I was with them for over 3 years. They did more to keep me sober than you would ever know. Because what they would do in their own loving way, they would correct me, my thinking. I talk about something, and I say something about resentment, right? And they say, wait a minute, Terry. You know what that word means? I go, yeah. And I said, no, you don't. Come over here and get a dictionary. And they made me read the damn dictionary, what resentment was. Fear. They made me do that, you know? You know, I mean, it was kind of strange. And my sponsor, I changed sponsors, and I got this sponsor named Chet. Chet got sober in Alcatraz in 1947. I don't know what he did to get there, but he was there and he got sober. And God blessed me with Chet. It was a blessing. Because Chet would sit down with me and he'd say, okay, Terry, you're smart. You're intelligent. But we don't think you're going to make it, man. You're just too damn smart. You got to get stupid. And he'd show me why I was stupid. You know? And he started showing me how to apply the steps to my life. And I'm going to tell you now, I'll give you that one. I'm going to tell you the greatest gift y'all have given me. I've not drank anything for over 21 years. One day at a time. But what you give me was not my drink. You give me a way to live life on life's terms. But you see, that was my problem. I was always restless, irritable, and discontented. Just like the doctor's opinion says. And you want to hear something new? I still am. I still am. Yeah, I'm driving over here this afternoon, you know, and my back hurts. Shit, well, I just called Tina and Nathan, you know. Well, I'm, you know, I'm pissed because my back hurts. I'm moving next week. I got a new job, and I'm moving, and I got an apartment now, and my wife's going to live in a house and where I live, and I'm going to live in an apartment, and, you know, all that stuff's going on, you know. Heard a guy talk a while ago about mowing the yard, getting hot. Friday, I'm out there cutting dead oak trees. It's hot. You know, I put that damn saw down. My son's with me, a 20-year-old son. And I'm thinking, shit, I'd like to have a beer right now. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of strange because I'm not a beer drinker. Never was. You know, I mean, that's just, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, there you go. I just, hey, you have those thoughts, you know, if you ever have those thoughts, you know what I call them? I call them my reminders. Okay, I'm still drunk. You know, shit. It's okay. Yeah, you know, it's okay. I call it the gorilla. The gorilla will come out at 2 o'clock in the morning in that front room, and it wants to play again with me. It says, come on, we can play. And I know that if I play with the gorilla, which is my stinking thinking and my selfish and self-centeredness, I'm going to get hurt. And I know the results of that because my first sponsor that took me through the steps went back out, and they found him in the density dumpsters crushed when they undid the dump truck. It was popping the dumpster. Drunk. You're kidding. Let me tell you how it works for me, Bailey. I've been sober 5 years, and the job I had changed, and I was unemployed. And I've always been kind of a church person. I got more of a church person after I got sober, you know. Before I got sober, my relationship with God was real simple. Don't jack with me, and I won't jack with you. And I believed in God only because y'all told me there was. And I thought, well, you got to believe in one because if there is, and you die, it's nice to know that. If there ain't, who cares? You know, that's the way I was. Now, I know that's not atheistic, and that's not agnostic. That's just practical. It's just all practical. Anyway, I thought about going to seminary. And I thought God had called me to do that. And so I went to seminary for 4 years, and I got a Master's Divinity degree at the end of it. In fact, when I started going to seminary, I called old Chet one day, and I said, man, I'm not sure this is what I should do. And he says, well, let's talk about it. So I kind of talked about it. And he says, will you come in around again? And I said, yeah, in a few days. And he said, my dad was still alive at the time. My sister lived there. I said, we'll come see him today. He said, well, come by and see what we'll talk about. So I went to see him. I went home a couple, 3 weeks later, and I went to see him. I told him about that. He says, Terry, you got to go do that. And I says, why? He says, because, son, he says, you don't know this. He says, 10 years before you came in AA, I saw you come in the doors. I said, what? He said, I saw you come in the doors of AA, and this is what you're wearing that you came in, which is true. That's what I was wearing. He said, I saw you in a dream, and the guy told me that he wanted you to get sober, and I was going to help you do that. What the guy said, God will get you sober, but I was going to help you get you through that. And he had something to start. I looked at Chet and I said, you've been drinking. He goes, no, I'm serious. You've got to go do it. And so I went. And it's kind of neat. Dear, when I got down there, it was kind of strange. Now, if you're drunk like me, you know, I'm just going to be honest about it. You know, I don't have that right. You know, as a cop, I mean, you know, one of the things I had to make amends to, I could never find the guy, but my sponsor had to, is I arrested a guy one night for drunk driving. I took him in, and you know, he had to get a breathalyzer, and they had this machine, and somebody has to breathe in first to make sure it's zeroed out, you know? And I'd been breathing, so I couldn't do it, so I called another guy, and he breathed in it, but I still popped the guy. It's a drunk guy. So, you know. If you're in the room right now, I'll see you after the meeting. Let me talk to you. But anyway. You know, I got down there, you know, and I'm not a godly person, you know. It says, you know, I smoke cigarettes and cuss, and, you know, that's the way I am, you know. And I get down there and all those people, and it was a strange deal. But it was a neat deal. When I got there, one of my classmates was also a recovering alcoholic. He had at the same time I did. And then there was another classmate with this one side, together with us. He'd been sober 17 years. Yeah, it was a neat deal. Well, anyway, God has a sense of humor. And I got out of seminary, and they made me a Lutheran pastor, an ordained Lutheran pastor. And it's in this little church in Cranfield's Gap. And Yeah, I'm kind of scared about that because, you know, I'm used to AA every day, you know. And there's not AA all the time in Bosque County. And I'll be doggone if I didn't meet a guy at AA. I first got there about 3 weeks later. He'd never been in church in 25 years. He comes over to the church where I'm at. He and his wife started from Killer Raider members, you know. And that's a hell of a deal. And I'll tell you what's funny about it. I still laugh every Sunday. Y'all don't know this, but I'm trusted with booze and money and y'all. And I laugh because I go, if they only knew what I was like before I got here, you wouldn't trust me with your children or your women. You damn sure wouldn't trust me with your booze. And if you let it get near you about investments, you wouldn't have it long. That's just the way it was with me. Well, the most important thing that I have to say about AA is how it's helped me to live a life on life's terms. I want to talk about that for a few minutes. One of the things that I found out in my fourth step is I've always been a mama's boy. I was the only son, and I was always a mama's boy. And the biggest fear I ever had was losing my mom. That's just the way it was. And I had it as an adult, too. I want you to know that. It was there. On the first anniversary that I had of being sober, I found out my mother was terminally ill. And I went down to the club at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, early, some of those old-timers, the gin game had just broke up. You know. I walk in there, and it's, what's wrong? So I'm telling you, my mom's dying. My mom's dying. She's got to be dying. They kept saying, what's the problem? I said, my mom's dying. I said, what's the problem? I said, my mom's dying. I said, no, idiot. What's your problem? Are you going to drink over that? I didn't think about that. Because that's a hurt. If you hurt, you know, it was a hurt that I can't describe. Thought, and old Chet says, Terry, you know, you don't got to drink over it. You just got to live with it. And we'll help you do that. And they did. Three and a half years. You people, AA, let me approach and deal with my mother's death without drinking. It's a hell of a deal. Hell of a deal. Second thing that's really powerful is I have discovered that I can be hurt and it's okay. I was a pastor of church for over 9 years. And last summer, that relationship ended. Not necessarily in a positive way. They asked me to leave. Can you believe that? That those people who I had married and buried and baptized would be upset with me and ask me to leave. And I left in November of last year, and guys in the group in Marine know I put on a good face, but I was hurting. Didn't drink, but I was hurting. Well, after Christmas, I called my closest friend I had. His name's Doug, lives in Amarillo. I told him what's going on. He says, come home, let's talk about it. So, after Christmas, everybody goes back to work. My son's in school. I love Amarillo. Got there roll at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and pulled up at the top of the Texas group. Doug was there with four other guys. They said, well, let's go talk. And you know, I did a four step again. It took 2 days to do that. Did it with them in their presence. And the gift of that is that I've learned that I can name and claim what is mine. And if it's bad, I can give it to God and ask God to change me. I have to give me all stuff. You're entitled to your stuff. But think about that for a second. Y'all are entitled to your stuff. And it's been okay. Didn't drink over. Got a new job now. That ain't so good because I've got this other thing going on. You know, that was not a problem. Now I got a problem. Let me tell you how it changed. First thing I did is I had to admit that I was paralyzed over alcohol, and my life was completely unmanageable. It had nothing to do with drinking. My life was unmanageable. When I come to y'all, I've been divorced, two children, had a new wife, owed American Express close to $50,000. Yeah, you can. They'll give you those platinum cards, you can run them up. Any bad deal. If you're drunk like me, you'll run them up. Yeah. Wife was 3 months pregnant that when I got something. And today, I don't owe no American Express thing. I still got the same wife. God love her. I got a son who's never seen me drink. I have a new granddaughter. I have two lovely daughters that live in Washington State. And they remember their dad was drunk. And they know I've changed. In fact, my ex-wife lives out there. And she and I can tolerate being in the same room today. It took a while. AA did that. You know, I had to work on my stuff. Not her, my stuff. You know, today I don't think about drinking ever again. I can stand up in front of a group of people and say, my name is Terry and I'm an alcoholic and I've been sober since March 26, 1988. And by God, I feel good about that. I feel good about that. Think about the miracle that happens. You know, I heard you come in and been here about 8 days, right? Here's the miracle that happens. You go from wondering if you'll ever drink. You know, will I ever be able to live without drinking? To a place where you know you can live through anything without drinking. One, I had to be an alcoholic. Two, I had to come with a power greater than myself to restore my sanity. Boy, I had a hard time with that deal, you know, because I wasn't insane when I got here. And I told those guys on 39, I said, look, I'm not insane. And they said, really? And they said, well, tell us why. And I said, well, here's a classic diagnosis of insanity. This is the way they determine. One, do you suffer from illusions? Two, do you have delusions? In other words, do you see something there? And three, are you absent of time and place orientation? And I said, I'm not crazy, because that's the classical deal. And one of those old guys said, really? And I said, right. I said, did you ever get drunk and see shit that wasn't there? I went, yeah. Did you ever tell somebody you something you wasn't? And I went, yeah. did you ever get where you were at? And I went, yeah. They said, sounds like you're crazy to me. And I went, yeah, you're right. That's a neat deal when you can understand you're insane. And God can restore your sanity. Three, I made a decision about God in my life. It's that simple. You know, that's what I did. That's about God in my life. Four, I took an inventory. I caught the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, there was some good stuff in there, there was some bad stuff, and there was some ugly stuff. Five, I shared that with God and another human being. Interesting deal. When you get rid of all that stuff, the most secrets, you don't have to drink no more. Now, I've been benefiting. The guy did my first 4-step with. He's dead now, so I know he ain't stuck by. No, I'm serious. Six, I became retired and have gotten rid of those defects of character. And I did. I just asked God. And I still do. You know, when I get rid of that, I still ask God. You know, I'm still sick. You know, I tell these guys all the time, really, I'm still crazy. I'm still sick. I'm just better today. You should see me 21 years ago. You know? I made a list of people I've harmed. I've made amends to when I could. And I just told you about that. I always said every time I speak, I wonder that guy was arrested. One of these days, God's going to run into him, I hope, and I'll say, I'll meet you in the parking lot. You can beat me up or I can talk about it. You know? I made those amends. I made a list. I've made those amends. I've attempted on a daily basis to have a conscious contact with God. I only ask you, let me be what I'm supposed to be for you today. I'm driving over. This morning I'm going to the golf course. I told God, I said, let me have a good day and just let me be who I'm supposed to be today, right? So I guess I wasn't supposed to play golf because my back went out. On the way over here, I just said, God, I don't know what I'm going to say. Just take care of it. That's a neat deal. It's a neat deal to have that. You know? The neatest thing is I don't have to manage it. man, I don't know about you. When you're managing all that crap, you can get restless cerebral discontent pretty quick. I don't got to manage it anymore. Now, I do sometimes, and when I do, I get restless cerebral discontent. And when I'm sick and tired of that, I sit and take a drink, I say, okay, God, I let you, you know. The greatest thing, though, is that I've had a spiritual awakening. When I came down off Solomon's, I was pissed at God for a very good reason. I turned 21 in Vietnam, and about 2 months, 3 months before that is when I got there. And on my 21st birthday, I was flying in a helicopter and riding in a helicopter, and we're over North Vietnam. And this guy came up behind a tree and shot at me, and all I saw was a pin missed when I shot back. And I said, man, there can't be a God. God would not be a part of this. And if God is, God's a son of a bitch. You heard me straight. That's what I said, and that's the way I thought about it. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hit that real good. I didn't even put that in my force down. I've been sober about 2.5 years. Chip told me one day, he said, Terry, he talks about something. That's what he said. Why are you so angry at God? So I told him. He said, is there a possibility there could be a different concept of God? Because my concept of God was guys up there taking books, you know. And I said, yeah, he said, well, come on out to the car with me because I want to show you something that's not AA approved literature. I got to his car and he gives me his New Testament and he had me read the first chapter of the book of John, the Gospel of John. And verse 5 says this, that the light has come in the world and darkness cannot overcome it. That's what it says. He says, can you buy a God like that? I go, yeah. He said, Terry, you know, he says, that was a horrendous thing you went through. It was. It had to be life-changing. But you know that God was present in it. You just didn't know. To this very day, when things are going goofy, I have to remember that. God's in this somewhere. I just don't know it. And it's going to be okay. Last part I say is this here. I've been sober a year. I've already got my 1 year chip. And if you ever get a 1 year chip and you're at old timers, this is what they'll do. You'll be real proud of it. And you sit down and they'll, you know, they go, well, now you're committed, you know. I was honored to go back next year and speak at my home group's 62nd anniversary. And those old, some of them old guys that ain't dead were sitting on the front row. You know, as I walked by, one of them said, he's sitting alive and open his mouth. You know, that's where they are. You know? I did sober about 12 months. Well, over 12 months. I've been meeting one day and I hadn't been doing my God deal lately. And I said, shit, this deal don't work and I'm going to get drunk. This deal don't work, I'm going to get drunk. And I'm sitting in a meeting thinking that stuff. That's how crazy I was. And about that time, they started reading Hat Works. That's why I'm so grateful to read Hat Works every week. Because as I got to those steps, step one, I got to 12 steps, it says this. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And the God I know today showed up. I get goosebumps right now thinking about it. I'm telling you, that's the way I got it. That's the way I got this God concept. I didn't get it in the church. Now, God sent me back to the church after I got it. But I didn't get it in the church. People do. I didn't. And that's a great blessing. But you have this spiritual awakening, and you know, God's in this deal with us. It's going to be okay no matter what. Except no saying. I don't care whether it gets up, goes down. Rain, snow, sleet, or drought. She leaves, she stays. I lose my job, I keep my job. The guy's working for me, he either quit or I hire new ones. No matter what. God is in charge, and it's going to be okay. I'm thankful for that. So you who've been sober about 8 days,
it's time.
Hope you don't miss it. You know, every time I hear God say this time, I'm thankful you got that. But some people have been sober here longer than I have, and they'll tell you this. Some people don't make it back. And I'm going to close with this. 2.5 weeks ago, I'm doing some part-time work at the church I'm now doing full-time work with. And Saturday morning, one of the members called me and said, I don't know what to do. I said, what? They got a problem. I said, what's your problem? I said, they just found my son dead in Austin. And I said, I'll be there when I have a taste there. I get there, and here's a mama and a dad and a sister. The young man's name is Jay. He's 34 years old. Died. They didn't know what was the cause of death. I talked to the medical examiner, and the medical examiner said, well, it looks like it's natural causes, but we found a coke pipe, a crack pipe, next to his body. This time, I started telling about their son, who had been in and out of treatment, been in prison 3 times. Drugs and alcohol, since 15, 16 years old. And they were thankful that for the last 8 or 9 months, he was holding a steady job. He got out of prison. He was having a steady job. He'd been a little stressed lately, but he seemed to be working out okay. Last Thursday, the dad come to see me in my office. He says, we got the death certificate of our son. And I said, right, sick. They said it was a heart attack, but that he had cocaine in his body. And he says, why did he do that? I looked at him and I said, because he's a drunk. That's what drunks and drunkies do. That's what we do. That's what we do. I said, he'd been a little stressed, probably wasn't going to meetings anymore. Knew where that old supplier was. Knew that would change it. Took a hit. And this time he had a heart attack. He says, wow. And I says, but here's some good news. He said, well, I says, Jake, don't got to do that no more. See, what I've discovered is if you're a drunk like me, you get 2 options. Don't drink or drink. Don't drink or drink. And if you drink, and you drink like I do, 4 things will happen. 1, you'll quit drinking and drinking. 2, you'll get locked up for drinking. 3, they'll put you in a crazy house for drinking. Or 4, you'll die drinking. Now, I'm a little football player. And Bear Bryant said he didn't like the forward pass. And the reason why was he threw the ball, and there's four things that happen, and 3 that make very good. And it's the same thing with us. You see, I believe I got sober and got a purpose because when that dad came to my office this last week, I could tell him the truth that his son was not a bad person. His son was a good person. His son was a sick person, but he was a good person. And the reason why he did that is because he was sick. He wasn't bad. And you see that problem right here? And I want y'all to know, if you haven't been here as long as I have, or you've been here longer, it's a neat deal. And I'm sure glad I got a chance not to miss this deal. Because I tried real hard not to make it. I tried real hard not to make it. Anyway. It's good to be here in sober night. And I am so gracious that I came to this place on March 26th of 1988, unloved child of God, and discovered that I was a little child of God. And it was going to be okay if I would just stay close to God and do this deal. And thank you for being here. Thank you.
Thank you again, Terry, for coming in speaking.
Thanks for asking.
Thank you for allowing me to chair this meeting also. It was a privilege and an honor. And again, I'm sorry I missed the first part of the meeting. If you are a newcomer in need of a sponsor, please refer to the sponsor board. Is there anyone here that would like a desire chip now to try our way of life for the next 24 hours? Okay. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. We ask that guests and those here for the first time not to contribute. Please remember the coffee kitty. Your contributions are appreciated. Announcements are on the chalkboard. Are there any other AA-related announcements? Okay. As chairperson, I'm responsible to see that this room is left clean and in order. Please clean up after yourself. And please remember that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. Where we are now, where we are going. Please respect this and treat it in confidence. Whom you also see here and what you hear here. We will now close with the Lord's Prayer for those who care to join us.
Terry, would you take us out?
Sure. Who keeps us clean and sober?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back, and it works if you work.
Stay healthy.
Peace in your...